Hey, football fans, this is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.
What's up? Welcome in to the Athletic Fantasy Football Podcast. Michael Beller here with you on Tuesday, November 9th. Just put behind us the craziest week of the NFL season to date. Week 9, looking ahead to Week 10 now. And as you all know, Tuesdays here on the Athletic Fantasy Football Podcast are beat writer and mailbag days. So we start this off with a trio of beat writers checking in on their teams from a fantasy perspective. And let's just get that rolling right here. First up, Washington football team and our Washington football team beat writer, Ben Standig. Ben, what's going on, man? Thanks for being with us on the Fantasy Football Pod.
Hey, always appreciate the ask. I don't think there's been a ton of reasons to want to talk about Washington football from a fantasy perspective lately, but I appreciate the time.
Hey, I guess there haven't been. I suppose that's true. And unfortunately, the first thing I want to ask you about is a negative reason to talk about this team. That's Antonio Gibson and the injury that he's been dealing with for a while now. What can you tell us about the injury, how he's able to play through it, and any concerns about Washington ultimately deciding that they just need to shut him down and let this heal?
Yeah, I'm a little concerned. What he looks like coming out of this bye, even just in practices, but certainly the game, I think will tell us a lot going forward, because obviously he definitely was limited the last month or so. He only had 11 touches in the loss at Denver. And look, he is one of the more explosive running backs in the league, one of those guys that you legitimately can take it, you know, make a big play or take it to the house whenever he touches the ball. But we haven't seen as much of that explosiveness lately because he's been dealing with this shin injury, stress fracture in his shin that's limited him in practice. In games, they actually gave Jared Patterson more carries last week, which, you know, Jared Patterson did fine, but you know, you're not expecting that from the undrafted free agent. I do wonder, especially, you know, if they play Tampa Bay this week, if they lose, they go to 2-7. If at some point, do they start thinking, okay, we need to heal this guy up as best we can? So I am concerned a bit, but at the same time, you know, if he's playing, depending on your options, you know, he's one of those guys that can obviously make a big play, and he is their goal line back. So, you know, I would probably keep using him, but tread lightly, or at least keep an eye on what's going on in Washington.
In a world where they do decide, this season's over, we need him healthy for next year, we're shutting him down, what does a J.D. McKissic, Jared Patterson backfield look like?
Yeah, I mean, look, McKissic was obviously really effective last year, catching a ton of passes. He's a slitherer. He's got speed. He's not a run between the tackles kind of a guy. You know, obviously more of your passing down back. But, you know, he can be effective, right? I mean, and Patterson, you know, he is the smallest guy out there. But we all, you know, if you've paid attention to him in college, you know he's very effective. And he's shown that ability so far here in the pros. And Washington's offensive line has been one of the big surprises for the team this year in a positive way. And, you know, one of the better units in the league. They did just lose center Chase Rie, though, to a season-ending injury. So that's going to shake things up a bit further. It's possible they get back Brandon Scherff and Sam Cosmi. They're two starters on the right side this week. We'll have to see about that. They've been out for the last several weeks, which is also to a degree, you know, impacted Gibson's situation, though their backups have done largely okay. So, you know, I think there's still some hope there, but, you know, you're talking about more pedestrian type of hope, not, you know, a guy breaking a 40-yarder like the way Gibson can, but, you know, incremental yardage. Although with McKissic in a PPR league, I think he could be a potential starter some weeks for sure.
We've been going the last month or so, maybe a little bit more now, I guess more if you include the bye, without Logan Thomas. All signs point to him returning this week. Any reason to think he's not out there for the team this weekend?
Well, we'll see. I'm air quoting here. They practiced on Monday, but because off the bye, but not a real practice, mm-hmm. and they don't have to announce whether they would have him truly start practicing coming off IR until Wednesday. Ron Rivera told us yesterday they wanted Monday to test that hamstring to see where he's at, and if he feels okay for Wednesday, then he'll probably start practicing. The clock would start ticking to bring him off IR, and then yeah, there's a chance he could be able to go this week. But you know, like with all these things, you got to tread lightly with some of these injuries. He's obviously a very important player to them, so you would like to think there's a good shot he can come back, but Wednesday we'll have a real feel. So you know, check the injury reports. If he's back practicing, I would feel pretty decent he plays this week. But you know, with these injuries, you know, you never know for sure.
We've seen about half a season now of Taylor Heinicke as this team's starter, and you know, still unsure as to what and when the situation could be with Ryan Fitzpatrick. With what you've seen just up close, go back to last season, right? I mean, Taylor Heinicke made the waves against Tampa in the playoffs, and now he gets to play Tampa here in Week 10. But just you know, with what you've seen this year, I mean, how would you grade Taylor Heinicke the starting quarterback?
So it depends how you want to look at it. If you view it from a perspective of here's this guy that nobody knew about prior to that, you know, Tampa Bay playoff game last year. Who that was only his second career start. He comes in, you know, has to come in relief for Ryan Fitzpatrick. And you know, Washington's two wins this year are largely because Taylor Heinicke played the role of hero at the end of two games with two, you know, thrilling late game rallies to win. That said, if you view it on the scale of, well, he is an NFL quarterback and he has to get the job done, you know, Washington's offense has faded a bit over the last month. Now, it's coincided with a bunch of these injuries, some of which I just mentioned. They haven't had Curtis Samuel effectively all year. And the red zone has been kind of a mess, or really anything inside the 30. They moved the ball really well against Green Bay and Denver to the point that almost all of their possessions at some point plays were run inside the opposing territory, but every time they would get into the red zone, they just failed. They went 0 for 6 in those opportunities, whether that was missed kicks, whether that was turnovers, loss of down, whatever. They weren't punching it in. So, you know, I think Heinicke on a realistic scale has done pretty well, but in terms of like, okay, well, this isn't a feel-good story. How is he going to make my fantasy team better or Washington better? It's starting to, you know, it's starting to look like what you expect when you have the backup quarterback play a lot, diminishing returns over time as other teams start to get a feel for what he is. He does get yards on the ground with his legs, so that's a positive. But, you know, it's starting to go the way you kind of think it might go when you have a backup in there. Again, if he gets some other starters back, that should help. But at the same point, you know, we've kind of seen what the ceiling probably is for Taylor Heinicke.
Yeah, it would have been nice to have seen this team as it was built in the offseason. Ryan Fitzpatrick at the helm, Terry McLaurin, Antonio Gibson being healthy, Logan Thomas, Curtis Samuel. It was an offense that we had reason to at least be a little bit excited about and just haven't really gotten to see them. I don't think we haven't seen them altogether, have we, right? Because Curtis Samuel was out at the start of the season and then Fitzpatrick hurt in Week 1. So a bit of a letdown in that regard. Do you think we see anything new, any new wrinkles to anticipate coming out of the bye?
Well, it's a good question. I mean, I'm not anticipating Curtis Samuel back, so you know that would be a huge one there. You know, Ron Rivera talked. So they've had issues on third down to a degree this year. Ron Rivera talked yesterday about he thinks that sometimes that they're getting some good yards on first down, giving them a second and short, but then they're using that opportunity to try to make a big play down the field. When that doesn't work, they're failing on third down. So it's possible we could see, if I say a little more conservative, I don't necessarily know if I mean that, but maybe a little more focus on keeping the chains moving rather than definitively picking up big chunks of yards, which realistically, other than Terry McLaurin and Antonio Gibson, if he's healthy, they don't have a ton of game breakers, so to speak. So, you know, beyond that, I'm not sure. Deami Brown was practicing yesterday. From what we could see, he'd missed some time recently with a knee injury. He's had a bit of a rough rookie season, but I think there's still some hope there. He could be a guy that gets a little bit more involved if he's available. So, you know, I think those are they just need some basic things to get going. They just need some positive momentum. Obviously, this is not going to be an easy game against Tampa Bay. So, you know, it's I guess you could say it's either a throw the kitchen sink at kind of game, or it's that we just need to focus on the basics kind of game. And at least the hint on a Monday from Ron Rivera was focusing on the basics and just trying to keep the chains moving on offense.
Yeah, what are your expectations for this matchup with the Buccaneers? Obviously a very tough matchup on the defensive side of the ball, and this is a defense that has just not lived up to preseason expectations. So what do you go into this game expecting to see from WFT?
Oh, boy. A lot of the issues for them have been on the defensive side. That's the side of the group that people got really excited about, and it just has not lived up to the hype. But in terms of the offense, I mean, look, you know, Tampa Bay is really good on both sides of the ball, so I don't really have great expectations for these guys. Terry McLaurin, you know, obviously he's one of the better receivers in the league, but his numbers have been a bit weak in recent, in general in recent weeks, in part because they have, they're struggling with their other spots. You know, no Logan Thomas, no Curtis Samuel, a limited Gibson. Defenses can focus more on McLaurin. I think Heinicke should be able to put up some playable numbers in, like, say, two quarterback leagues, especially if he can run. Last week against Denver, he did run a bit more, which was a good sign. But, you know, it's hard for me to be realistic and think that they're going to be able to compete with Tampa Bay based on the version of these two teams we've seen this year.
And definitely a tough one coming for Washington, but in the fantasy world, Terry McLaurin, no doubt about it. Antonio Gibson, as long as he's out there, no doubt about it. Fingers crossed that we get Logan Thomas back this week as well. That's Ben Standig, Washington football team beat reporter here at The Athletic. You can get him on Twitter at Ben Standig. And also, Washington sports fans, you probably already know about it, but we'll throw it out there anyway. Standig Room Only, Ben's podcast here at The Athletic. Be sure to check that out. Not just Washington football team, but all sorts of DC sports. Ben, thanks again for being with us in the Fantasy Football Pod.
Hey, I definitely appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
All right, next up on this beat writer episode of the Athletic Fantasy Football Podcast is the New Orleans Saints. And to talk Saints, of course, we bring on our Saints beat writer, Kat Terrell. Kat, thanks for being with us here today.
Thanks for having me on.
Let's jump into this team. A team that we knew was going to have a lot of moving parts coming into this season, and maybe has even escalated beyond what we thought was going to be the case when we started this year. And obviously things changed a whole lot for them when Jameis Winston tore his ACL a couple of weeks ago. Trevor Siemian getting the first post-Jameis start. Salvaged the game in the fourth quarter of that loss to the Falcons. Do you see any possibility of a Siemian Taysom Hill quarterback battle eventually brewing here?
Actually, yes, and it's not because of anything Siemian did. It's just the fact that Sean Payton alluded to Taysom being the starter going forward after Winston got hurt that night. If Taysom had been healthy, Taysom was in concussion protocol. So he didn't fully practice until Thursday of the week of the Falcons game. So it's possible the Saints had a plan all along to make Taysom the starting quarterback that couldn't happen because he was in concussion protocol. So if it's going to happen, it's going to be this week, and it'll have nothing to do with how Siemian played. I don't know that it really mattered who was quarterback against the Falcons because the receivers could not catch any passes. So this will be an interesting week to watch for that.
Yeah, definitely. You know, no knock on Trevor Siemian, but in the fantasy world, with what Taysom Hill does with his legs, he becomes a whole lot more interesting. The New Orleans Saints quarterback position becomes a whole lot more interesting to us if indeed it is Taysom taking over as the starter going forward. Let's look in the backfield for a second here. We basically know what Alvin Kamara is week in and week out, but this team went out and brought back Mark Ingram via trade just before the trade deadline. He got 6 carries in his first game back with the team, 9 carries in his second game, and 5 targets in that game against the Falcons as well. I mean, is that a repeatable weekly role for Mark Ingram?
Absolutely. I think you look back a few years ago when they were boom and zoom and Ingram picked up quite a bit of yards that year. He's always been good in the passing game. I think that's been an asset of his. I'm actually really surprised they didn't just try to run Ingram almost every play last week. The Falcons have a bad run defense. It was actually working, and Ingram's about to take over as the franchise rushing leader, if you can believe that. So kind of surprised he didn't see more time. But I think that he will see time going forward, but Kamara is going to be the guy. I mean, there's not going to be any big change to his role. The only thing Ingram really does is maybe he's good for a couple of passes, maybe some short yardage carries. And that, if Taysom doesn't end up being the quarterback, Taysom could be the guy in the red zone on short yardage. So that's going to kind of be a thing evolving week to week as well. Fun fantasy team. You never know what they're going to do.
Yeah, exactly. We love it when they get inside the 5-yard line. It's like, this could realistically be 3 different guys getting the ball. It's right. Absolutely what we love in the fantasy world. Yeah, right. Let's just mix them all in. This is great. This is super fun to project. Obviously Alvin Kamara, the center of this all, and it's just been, I mean, even for Kamara standards, just the usage has been off the charts this season. We're talking more than 20 opportunities, more than 20 carries plus targets in all but one game. I mean, and even in some of those, he's just absolutely even blown that 20 number out of the water. Again, is this just, I mean, should we just be expecting this from Alvin Kamara week in, week out, this level of usage?
Unfortunately for him, or fortunately, depending on how you look at it and how much he likes, you know, being able to use his legs at the end of the season. Yes, I think you're just going to keep seeing it because the Saints just have no one else. I mean, it's Alvin Kamara at the top and then every other skill position player way down. So they have to use him. They have to use him that much, even with Ingram, because there's just no one else reliable. I mean, Kamara and Ingram were the only ones out there catching passes against the Falcons. It was ridiculous. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I have Kamara on one of my fantasy teams. So if that tells you anything, doesn't let anyone down week to week. So I think you're going to still see an abnormally high usage for his position going forward.
It's just been, you know, sort of unexpected, I guess, in that we expected someone to be able to step up in the absence of Michael Thomas. And, you know, there was a lot of love in the fantasy community for Marquez Callaway coming into the season. Obviously that hasn't panned out. We've seen a big play here or there from Deontay Harris, but nothing consistent really there. I mean, I can remember back to July and August when people were trying to get themselves excited about Adam Trautman as some sort of low end tight end one. And obviously that hasn't happened. Is there any reason to think over the second half of the season that any one of these non-Kamara, non-Ingram pass catchers turns into anything consistent in the fantasy world?
You know, I tried to talk people off of Trautman at the beginning of the season based on what I saw in training camp. I actually advocated picking up Juwan Johnson, and, you know, that didn't end up being something consistent. If you had him week one, I actually did have him on my roster week one, yeah, but I didn't start him. Then you were at the 0.5% of fantasy players that really had a great day. But, you know, Trautman has not been reliable. He's been a culprit of drop passes too. They keep going to him. So I don't know, maybe by sheer volume, he'll do something good going forward, but I wouldn't trust him. Juwan Johnson, same thing. I mean, he was inactive because they needed someone else in special teams. So you can't rely on him. Not that, you know, most people would be in a position to have to do that. If that's the case, your fantasy tight ends are really hurting, I guess. But I think maybe out of all of them, Traquan Smith could end up stepping up. It's one of those things. Again, he's very inconsistent. I think he's shown some progress after he's come back, but he did have a connection with Jameis Winston, and now that's gone. So he's a guy maybe if you have to, you roster and, you know, hope that you're starting to see some forward progress with him. But it's really him or Deontay, and Deontay is not a guy that can play every snap, you know, just his size and everything like that. It's just not going to happen. But, you know, he is the most consistent receiver the Saints have. But, yeah, I was on the Callaway hype train. I probably created the Callaway hype train, so sorry about that. But I don't know why. It hasn't panned out yet.
Yeah, I suppose there's a reason other than him just being great that Alvin Kamara is getting those 20 opportunities every single week that we talked about. It's because it really is him and only him in this offense. They're going up against a pretty good offense in week 10, even without Derrick Henry. Titans offense, nothing to sneeze at. And the defense has been picking it up. Very impressive performance in their week 9 win at the Rams. What are your early expectations for that matchup here?
Well, I was looking at the weather of all things the other day, and it seems like it's one of those games where it's going to be cold. I don't know if it's going to be windy. The Saints struggled in Nashville about 2 years ago, and that was when they had Michael Thomas because of the conditions. I mean, I believe it's a grass field. And I say all this to say I would think that it'd be another game where they would heavily try to rely on their run game to try to counteract that. So lots of Kamara, lots of Ingram. If Hill is the quarterback, though, when Hill was the quarterback last time, Kamara's receptions went way down. So that's something to note. But, you know, other than that, I would just, you know, maybe if you have to pick up Ingram and kind of hope that the Saints are going to go in with some sort of game plan to get things moving on the ground, because I'm not going to sit here and tell you that one of the pass catchers is suddenly going to, you know, step up and have a monster game. I just, right now, it's hard to believe in any of them.
Yeah, it's definitely a team that, as we've said a couple of times, it's Alvin Kamara and not a whole lot else. Maybe Mark Ingram steps up as something of a consistent fantasy performer, and Taysom Hill, if and when he is the starter because of what he does with his legs, gets right into that QB1 discussion, at least from a fantasy perspective. So we'll be very interesting to watch how things develop in New Orleans this week leading up to that Titans game. That's Kat Terrell, New Orleans Saints beat writer here at The Athletic. You can follow her on Twitter at Kat_Terrell. Kat, thanks again for being with us on the Fantasy Football Pod.
Anytime.
All right, one more beat writer here with us on this episode of the Athletic Fantasy Football Podcast, and it is Vic Tafer, who covers the Las Vegas Raiders for us at The Athletic. Vic, thanks for being with us on this beat writer edition of the Athletic Fantasy Football Podcast.
No problem, man. Fired up. Big game this week.
Yeah, big game for the Raiders going up against the Chiefs on Sunday Night Football. We'll get to that at the end of our little segment here. At the start, I want to kick things off with the interim head coach, Rich Bisaccia. We've now seen him for three games as the head man in Vegas. Have you noticed any appreciable changes to this offense, the way things are being run, the way players are being used, anything that we could use as actionable in the fantasy world?
Yeah, I think Greg Olsen, you know, is taking over play calling. I think he's done a pretty good job. He's definitely trimmed down John Gruden's playbook a little bit, focused on some things. He definitely uses play action a lot more often, definitely uses screenplays more often. I think from a fantasy perspective, you definitely see him. Kenyon Drake being used the way people thought he was going to be used at the beginning of the season. I think he's a guy who comes in now and gets like, you know, 10, 12 targets a week, 12, sorry, touches a week. They use him also running the ball more than he had under Gruden. So I think he's a guy that's become a reliable fantasy option week in and week out.
Yeah, it's something that we certainly have noticed over these last few weeks with Kenyon Drake. And, you know, considering the state of the running back position, even though that doesn't necessarily sound like a huge role or the usage doesn't necessarily jump off the page when you're just scrolling through box scores, it's definitely one that makes him, you know, running back two flex worthy if it's something that he can retain for the rest of the season. Is there any reason to think that he won't retain a role like that for the rest of the season?
I don't think so. I think, like I said, Olsen's really made a commitment to using him that way. He's come in. I mean, Josh Jacobs looked really good last weekend. Like, it's the best he's looked, I think, this year in terms of health-wise and, you know, and kind of bouncing in and out of running plays. But I think definitely want to give Drake a regular role. I think that Jacobs is number one, but Drake will definitely get enough touches both on the ground and also targets that he'll definitely be a guy they count on. And he's shown he's played well. And so I think they definitely want to keep that going the rest of the year.
All right, DeSean Jackson, another new guy in town for the Raiders, just making the signing here. How does he affect this wide receiver group, both in terms of what his role will be and the trickle-down effect from adding him? What does that mean for the other guys on the wide receiver depth chart?
Yeah, it's yet to be determined because he's going to be 35 next month. He just was released by the Rams, so they're not really sure what exactly he has in that tank. But they're excited about what they saw on film as far as the ability to stretch the field. That speed is still there. He's still healthy at this point of the season. And I think that, you know, this move happened right after the game on Sunday. So clearly they weren't happy with the job Zay Jones did in terms of stretching the field. And I think Zay will still be involved in not giving up on Zay Jones. So those guys might share that role replacing Henry Ruggs at first. And we'll wait and see how DeSean Jackson does. But just that they need that, you know, that ability to make some deep plays to keep defenses honest. So I think DeSean Jackson will get a chance to do that pretty soon here, so we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, we know obviously that Darren Waller is the number one receiver in Vegas. He's just that brand of tight end. He's one of a special group of tight ends who filled that role on their respective teams. And yeah, Derek Carr has been a surprisingly efficient fantasy option this season. Not a guy who you're going to lean on week in and week out, but definitely someone who has had enough juice to at least be in that fringe starter discussion in most weeks. So how do they fill that in around him at the wide receiver position? If it can't all be Darren Waller, is there anyone else who can be something of a consistent option in this offense the rest of the way?
Yeah, I think Hunter Renfrow has been pretty reliable, pretty consistent. I think I don't know if it's like 50 yards a week, and he scores every now and then. But he's a guy that Derek Carr definitely trusts, especially on third down. So you might see him get a little more action going forward. But and then, you know, the wild card is Brian Edwards. Edwards is a guy who's had some big weeks, and some weeks he hasn't really shown up. And last week there was two plays that they kind of got him some chances down the field, pretty good chunk plays, and they didn't happen. And Derek Carr was clearly frustrated with Edwards and at least one of them. So I think that's a guy, they like his ability, they like his progress. He's still very young, but he's kind of a wild card as far as the fantasy goes. He might have a big week and he might not. So they're going to be kind of a roll of the dice going forward.
We just talked about Carr being that sort of fringy guy. Obviously, things did not come through for him in a spot against the Giants last week. It's not the easiest spot. You know, the Giants are, you know, not quite a doormat, obviously not really a playoff contender, but the defense has been good, especially through the air over the last month or so. It's a road game. Everything that the Raiders have been dealing with the last few weeks, not, of course, not the easiest spot, but was there anything that you saw from Derek Carr that you didn't like? Was this a one-game anomaly? What did you see when you were at this one?
Yeah, the biggest thing I saw was he wasn't accurate. I think he missed a lot of throws. The interceptions were both bad decisions. And so I just think that you look at his season so far, and it's kind of like, you know, it's kind of a hiccup. I mean, he's been really accurate all season long until last week. So these guys didn't want to use, you know, the tragedy and all the things that have happened as an excuse. And no one said that was, you know, they all said that was just a football game and they were able to block out everything else. But I think for Derek Carr, you know, I won't give him a pass, but I think he's probably, as the leader of this team, I can imagine he probably talked to everybody on the roster last week. There's probably a lot going on his plate last week, so maybe that's the reason he wasn't totally as good as he has been in the past. I don't know. You mentioned the Giants' defense is actually not bad, and the Rangers' line has some problems with protection, but I expect Derek Carr to bounce back. I expect Derek Carr to be the guy he was, you know, the first seven games, as opposed to the one he was last weekend.
Monster game coming up this week for the Raiders. Home game against the Chiefs. Sunday night football. Big game in the AFC West. Could potentially be a big game in the AFC wildcard race with how this conference is just really stacking up one on top of the other. We know that these teams have given us some really good games in recent seasons. What are your early expectations for when these two teams get together on Sunday?
Yeah, it's a big spot for the Raiders. I think you know, the Chiefs are still reeling. Everyone's kind of waiting for them to bounce back all year long. I think the game last week was, again, really glaring. I mean, the Packers team was kind of there to be had without Aaron Rodgers. And, you know, the Chiefs only had 13 points. They didn't look good. They still don't look good. So I'm not sure this problem's going to get fixed. So I think if you're the Raiders, you go into this with a lot of confidence. You might even think you're the better team. And you might be the better team. I think you mentioned the offense will probably be back in stride next weekend. And I think, you know, Max Crosby and Yannick Ngakoue give him two big-time pass rushers who are going to give Mahomes trouble. That's something they haven't had in the past. Two guys on both sides who can really get some pressure going. And the run defense is not great, but, again, the Chiefs can't run the ball. So I just think it's a good matchup for the Raiders. I'm sure they'll be fired up coming back, you know, at home. And what's really a huge game kind of determines the way the rest of their season lays out, you know, so a little bit.
All right, that's Vic Tafer, Las Vegas Raiders beat writer here at The Athletic. You can get him on Twitter, at Vic Tafer. Also, of course, Raiders fans, you probably already know this, but just to make sure, State of the Nation, our Raiders podcast at The Athletic, and you can also catch Vic every Friday right here in this feed talking gambling with me and Zach Jackson. Vic, anything early catching your eye?
Not really. I'm still kind of reeling from last week. A lot of shocking games last week.
Oh, my God,
games,
yeah.
You have, like, no idea what the hell you're supposed to be talking about, and thinking you know an edge, but I'll say, you know, like I mentioned, I think the Raiders are might be the best team on the field on Sunday night, so I think that could be a spot. We're plus 2.5, I think, so, mm-hmm. So that could be one that jumps out right now.
Yeah, but over at BetMGM, plus 2.5, the Raiders are at home. Definitely don't mind taking a home dog, and a home dog that's been a good team more often than not this season. So that definitely could be one that we ultimately talk about. We've got about 48 hours, maybe a little less or so, to sift through this week's slate and really take a look at everything before we nail anything down. So I know I'll be using at least some of those hours to do just that. Vic, thanks again for being with us on the Beat Writer edition of the Athletic Fantasy Football Podcast.
All right, man. Take care.
All right, let's wrap things up on this episode of the Athletic Fantasy Football Podcast by opening up the Athletic Fantasy Sports Mailbag. Joining me to open up that mailbag is Brandon Funston. Funston, we've got some good questions today, man. You excited?
Oh, I am very excited. I always get excited to reach into the mailbag and see what our readers have to ask us here. Let's do it.
Yeah, let's do it. We've got another good mix of questions from Twitter, questions from the actual email address. That email address, if you want to get involved next week, tafantasysports@gmail.com. And, of course, you can always hit us up on Twitter. We solicit for the questions, so we try to get the replies to that exact tweet. So just look for that. You know, always coming your way every Monday and Tuesday, as some of these people did here. Let's start off with some of these Twitter questions. The first one, Funston, comes to us from Theo. Theo's got a high-end wide receiver question. What's your rest of season ranking for CeeDee Lamb, Stephon Diggs, and Justin Jefferson?
This is amazing. I'm actually going through it. I told you this. I'm going through a rest of season rankings exercise right now as we speak. And amazingly, I have these three receivers back to back to back in my receiving ranks. But I do have Stephon Diggs one, and it's basically still because he's the highest volume receiver on a super pass heavy, you know, offense, the number one guy. And I believe he might be in a per game basis third on this list so far, but he has more targets. It's not by a large margin. It's really basically a touchdown differential of one that's pulling him down. I think we have to still look at him the rest of the way and say, I want to follow the volume for a guy that has Josh Allen throwing me the football and it's going to be throwing it to me a lot. So I'm still on Stephon Diggs at one.
And then is it Jefferson CD or CD Jefferson?
It's Jefferson CD, yeah. But I really think these guys, you can you know, separate them with a razor, you know, basically with a razor thin, you know, width here.
Yeah, with what's his name? Now he does the Gene Steratore with Gene Steratore's index card, basically.
Yeah, exactly. are you of like mind? Or are you a little bit different on this one?
No, I'm of like mind. That's exactly the order that I would put them in also. And for the reasons you said is why I would have Diggs up top. And, you know, this was the order I had them in, not back to back to back, but this is the order I had them in coming into the season. Diggs was my top of these three, Jefferson 2, CD 3. And I don't think anything we've seen this season should dissuade us from, you know, going away from that ranking if that's the way you were coming into the year. And I would say, you know, Justin Jefferson, you and I talked about this with Jake on the Monday episode of this show. It's disappointing when Justin Jefferson has 9 targets over 2 weeks. That's obviously not what we expect. We want Justin Jefferson to be getting 9 targets a game. But he's doing what great receivers do, even with that short amount of targets, scoring touchdowns in both of these games. And in the loss to the Ravens, right, he only had 5 targets, but he turned that into 3 catches for 69 yards and a touchdown. And that's what you want out of the great receiver. That's what makes the great ones great, is that even when they're not getting a ton of work, they're still giving you that high-end production. And so I still feel very confident in each of these guys. Out of curiosity, you say you have them, you know, 1, 2, 3, Diggs, Jefferson, CeeDee, but where do they sit in your full-on wide receiver rankings?
8, 9, 10. If I just quickly give you the rundown, I'm Cooper Kupp, Davante Adams, Tyreek Hill, DK Metcalf, Jamar Chase, Mike Evans, Debo Samuel, Diggs, Jefferson, Lamb.
All right. Yeah, that feels totally fair for each of those guys.
And I honestly, I think you could push Debo Samuel into this group and say that they're all very close as well. So yeah, they're still rock solid wide receiver ones across the board, right in that middle area there.
All right. Well, since you mentioned Debo Samuel and potentially pushing him into this group and out of where you have him, that has a little something to do, or would have something to do, with the return, of course, of George Kittle and the resurgence of Brandon Ayuk. And Zach Kay has an email question for us on Brandon Ayuk. Basically, are you back in on Brandon Ayuk?
Well, how far back in? My rest of season ranking, I think I have him right around wide receiver 40. You know, when I was ranking going into the season, I had him right around the mid-20s. And kind of him and Debo, both right in that mid-20s area. Debo's moved up. And while I had buried Ayuk to the point where I'd cut him in a 12-team league, I now think he's viable in 12-team leagues again. George Kittle certainly, in a weird way, sort of helps, you know, and just kind of getting that whole unit. But this is a San Francisco team that wants to run the ball, that has now 3 legit options, and Ayuk is the third of those options in the passing game. So I'm not, you know, all the way back in Ayuk as a borderline wide receiver 2, upper end wide receiver 3. I think he's more of a back end wide receiver 3 or top end wide receiver 4.
Yeah, we're pretty much on the same page here. I'm back in an Ayuk to the extent that if he's available in my leagues, I'm definitely trying to get him. I'm definitely putting a claim in for Brandon Ayuk in any league I'm in where he's available, and I would be comfortable starting him, you know, depending on rest of my roster, buys, injuries, whatever. I think he's definitely back in that discussion, but I don't think he'll ever be back in the discussion that we were having around him coming into the season where we did think he was, you know, potentially a top 20 wide receiver and certainly a wide receiver too. I don't know if he'll ever get back to that stage this season, but he is back in our lives as a legitimate, not only someone should be on your roster, but potentially a fantasy starter as well. Let's go back to a question from Twitter. This one from Hunter on Twitter. Hunter is a concerned Jalen Hurts manager Funston, and he is looking for some late season QB stashes just in case Hurts ends up getting benched. Anyone that comes to mind for you?
Yeah, you're not going to get rich on this one, stashing somebody. You know, I think everybody's weirdly just kind of waited with bated breath for Trey Lance to get his opportunities. I'm not as excited about that. He's probably not as available as somebody like a Mac Jones or even a Trevor Lawrence at this point. But if you look at the end of the season schedules, their schedules are pretty friendly. And in the case of Mac Jones, I think the arc is going in the right direction. Like he's kind of getting, you know, more and more solidified as an NFL starter each passing week. So by the end of the season, he could be comfortably throwing, you know, mid 200 yards and two touchdowns on a regular basis week in and week out. So other than, you know, going for a try to get rich, almost kind of Jalen Hurts like replacement and Taysom Hill, if he's out there, I think Mac Jones or Trevor Lawrence is just kind of probably the best you can do in a competitive league.
I'll throw one more guy out there, Funston, and you know exactly who it's going to be. Justin Fields. Justin Fields not losing the job in Chicago. We have seen a couple of nice games from him, and that second half against Pittsburgh, I wouldn't be surprised if we, at the end of the season, look back at that second half against Pittsburgh and point to it as, you know, Justin Fields, something clicking for him in the NFL, because he really, I mean, some of those plays he made with his legs were great. Those two throws that put the Bears ahead, the first, the throw to Allen Robinson down the right sideline, and then the throw to Darnell Mooney, just a lot of intuition in that throw, in knowing that if I make this throw to this spot, it's going to be a touchdown or an incomplete pass, rolling left against his body, making that throw. It feels like something clicked for Justin Fields in that second half. And so I think that he's someone, too, who could be a really nice fantasy play down the stretch and also has that Jalen Hurts ability in terms of running the ball as well.
Yeah, no, I think that's a good call. Yeah, I mean, he's sort of, you know, from being completely abysmal to just taking little incremental steps. And I think he finally took a fairly big step in his NFL career against Pittsburgh, you know, on the road. That's a good defense. Lots of pressure. So the numbers he put up, you got to be encouraged about that. He's running now where he was reticent to do that early in the year. You know, we're seeing 30 to 50 yards now is starting to become a little bit more of a regular thing. And that's always the cherry on top for fantasy quarterbacks.
All right, we got two more questions that I want to get to quickly here, Funston. Carl's got one for us in the email inbox. Again, tafantasysports@gmail.com. Carl asks, what does a James Conner sell high look like? Which I interpret to mean, like, if you're going to sell him high, what are you going to sell him for right now? We know that Chase Edmonds is going to be out 3 to 4 weeks with that high ankle sprain.
Yeah, and that's kind of, you know, if, I always turn to Virginia Zakas, who Inside Injuries writes our injury columns. 3 to 4 weeks, I guarantee you she wouldn't say a high ankle sprain is a quick 3 to 4 week turnaround. That's, you know, typically I can hear her voice or her words in my head saying that's a six-week injury. So I think, you know, even assuming that Edmonds is back in a month is maybe on the wishful thinking side of things. So for all intents and purposes, I think that makes James Conner a sort of a bell cow for most of the rest of the season. And if that's the case, I think you have to turn, you know, look at him as a top 15 RB, and selling high is selling him as, you know, an RB1 level of value. And if that's the case, you know, I think you're talking about those receivers that we talked about earlier, like a Stephon Diggs, a Justin Jefferson, a CeeDee Lamb. I think that's in play. That's, you know, that's considered selling high. You know, the very top end tight end might not even be enough. You know, I think you could do it for, I think you could make the case that you want Travis Kelce for James Conner if that's what you want to do, if you have the luxury of just trading him away because you have lots of running back depth.
Right. And I guess that's possible, right? I mean, if we were drafting, if whoever drafted James Conner likely drafted him as their RB4, maybe if they went super RB heavy, their RB5. And so if you got fortunate over those first few, you know, rounds, maybe you took, like, I don't know, Aaron Jones and Austin Eckler at the turn, and then maybe you got DeAndre Swift, and then you got James Conner. I could see making that sort of deal, but I would have to be flush at running back and very, very confident in those guys going forward to want to deal James Conner for a non-running back, just because he does have the feeling of being a back-end RB1 for at least 3 to 4 weeks, and if Virginia's inclination is right, maybe even longer than that. So this is a good problem to have, Carl K, in our email inbox. Maybe not something that you actually want to do. One more question, this one coming to us from Corey, and Corey's asking about Odell Beckham. We know that today's the day for teams to claim Odell Beckham on waivers. Don't think that's going to happen. If we're holding on to Odell Beckham, as Corey is, where does he want him to land? Where do you want to see Odell Beckham for his fantasy purposes?
You know, there's been rumors that Seattle is, you know, one of the leading contenders. I don't think that would be terrible. You know, they want to kind of, you know, if you want to get to that Rams offense and think about the days of Brandon Cooks and Robert Woods and Cooper Kupp, you know, maybe it gets there. New Orleans allows him to go in and be the automatic number one. I don't know that the passing environment's all that great. I'd rather honestly see Taysom Hill throwing the ball to Odell Beckham than Trevor Siemian. And maybe he could put up something, you know, along the lines of what we saw Michael Thomas do last year with Taysom Hill. But, yeah, you know, another weird one, maybe, and I don't know if it had ever come through, but I wouldn't mind seeing Ryan Fitzpatrick throwing him the ball in Washington. You know, there's a clear need for a number two there. If we can get Fitzpatrick back just gunslinging, I could see that working out pretty well for Odell.
I love that these are the teams you bring up, Funston, because you have no way of knowing this, but two of the people who were on this show before you, Ben Standick, covering the Washington football team, Kat Terrell, covering the New Orleans Saints. And so maybe one of them ends up covering OBJ. I got to say, I am holding on to OBJ in some leagues, and the Saints, you know, even with that uncertain quarterback position, talk about a team where he just steps in and immediately could be a target monster. That's one that it feels realistic too, with where they are in the NFC playoff race and the clear, obvious need for a receiver. And hey, OBJ, plenty of New Orleans ties, hometown and LSU and all that. So it just feels like a spot that could really, really work out for him from a fantasy perspective. So in a league where I'm holding on to OBJ, I could definitely pull for the Saints being the team that ultimately gets him. And someone's going to get him. We should have some resolution on that. Maybe not before the waiver deadline passes, but after that, have to imagine that OBJ won't take too long to find a new home. And it will do it for this episode of the Athletic Fantasy Football Podcast. Our thanks to all the beat writers for joining us, Ben, Kat, and of course, Vic Tafer as well. For Brandon Funston, I am Michael Beller. Thanks so much for listening. We'll talk to you all soon. Have a great day. See ya.